This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 22nd, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 313. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, from Canadian whistleblower to Irish soccer executive, I catch up with North Vancouver's Kira McCormick, the new CEO and part owner of Limerick, Ireland's Treaty United FC. Is it just me, or does Justin Trudeau's Liberal minority government have the minus touch? Everything it does is backwards or upside down. From all the 2015 broken promises of democratic reforms and transparency, the balanced budget by 2019 that never happened, to the Trans Mountain Pipeline and its massive cost overruns, to Bill C-18, the Online News Act that backfired. Don't get me started on the mishandling of foreign policy. If not for the economy, it's the story of the year. One of the most egregious examples is the refusal to act swiftly and call a public inquiry into abuse and corruption in Canadian sport. The annual Online Sport Integrity Awards were October 19th from the University of New Haven in Connecticut. The program featured Judge Rosemary Aquilina, who sentenced disgraced USA Gymnastics Dr. Larry Nassar to life in prison for sexually assaulting gymnasts. Aquilina gave a passionate critique of the Government of Canada, the 2023 winner of the Ig Nobel Purpose Award for lack of integrity in sports.
I was so frustrated that I testified in Ottawa myself to try to make a difference. My plea for help, for action, for safety of all athletes fell on deaf ears. I don't think we've seen as many athletes coming forward in any country, united and calling for help. Calling for an inquiry to uncover the reasons why abuse is so rampant in Canada. Yes, Canada, a country known internationally for being a safe place. But clearly, Canada is not a safe place for athletes. It is not a safe place for children competing in sport. The fact is that athletes and advocates continue to report abuse and have not stopped their calls demanding safety for these past 2 years. Despite their actual knowledge of abuse, the Canadian government has taken no action to address abuse of athletes and call for an inquiry. This is absolute negligence and cannot be tolerated. In the face of a duty to speak on behalf of those without a voice, the Canadian government has remained silent and thus continues to act as co-conspirators in the abuse suffered by all athletes of all ages. Safety is a human right. Safety is not a question mark. Safety is not to be ignored. And yet, Canada takes no action. Canada remains silent while its athletes continue to be silenced and abused. Canada, without question, deserves this award. I never thought Canada would be placed in the same category as Qatar, last year's recipient for human rights abuse. Today, Canada sits one with Qatar.
The winner of the Nobel Purpose Award for integrity in sports was women's tennis legend Martina Navratilova. The outspoken advocate for protecting women and girls' sports for females only was also critical of the Trudeau Liberals.
You know, it's funny that Canada got this award for the Ig Nobel Award for denying victims of sexual abuse to speak out in athletics, and at the same time putting trans women rights ahead of women athletes. You saw what Justin Trudeau said, and just last week there was a protest for trans inclusion, and the women that were protesting were being attacked by trans allies and threatened, yet he spoke about hate and transphobia coming from our side, which I wonder how much this is connected, these two issues. I think they are. Many sports administrators are reluctant to give up their power, to give athletes a voice, for them to advocate for women's rights in all these areas, equal play, equal pay, equal treatment, protection from sexual abuse and other forms of abuse, welcoming environment for gays and lesbians, and women's right to our own sport category. It is athletes who largely suffer from this lack of integrity in sport, and that is why I will keep speaking out until we figure out a way that's good for everyone. We are not anti-trans. We are pro-women, pro-sports, pro-fairness, pro-equality. And we must find a way where everybody is welcome, but not at the cost of fairness to women and girls.
The Liberals are in free fall, according to various public opinion polls, unless Justin Trudeau takes a walk in the snow like his dad did back in 1984 and decides to let someone else lead the party. It will be two more years until the next election when Canadians can fire him en masse. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. From whistleblower in Canada to soccer CEO in Ireland, North Vancouver defender Kira McCormick sparked calls for a public inquiry into abuse in Canadian amateur sports more than 4 years ago. McCormick went public on her blog about disgraced National and Whitecaps coach Bob Berarda's return to the sidelines as a girls' soccer coach. Berarda was eventually jailed in 2022 for sexually assaulting four players over a 20-year period. McCormick had a 17-year career in NCAA, W League, and European soccer leagues. She even played for Ireland's national team. Early in 2023, McCormick made a comeback at age 43 with Treaty United FC in Limerick, Ireland. Now, with the backing of a Vancouver investment group, she has become the CEO and part owner of Treaty United. She joined me from Limerick.
First of all, how did this all come together?
I've had the, desire for like a long time to do a team in Ireland or a club in Ireland. And initially was thinking about the women's side of things, but when I spoke to the League of Ireland, they are, you know, we're moving towards professionalizing into having like full house clubs of men, women, and youth academies. So basically from there, they told me to maybe focus just on clubs that needed help on the women's side. And they mentioned a couple of clubs, one of which was Treaty United in Limerick, and Mary Curtin, who was my teammate with the national team for Ireland, was a player and a coach in the club already. So I reached out to her and then made an investment this year, just a small one to get Canadian players over there, female players. And then once I was there, I kind of saw that the Irish League's really moving towards professionalizing and the club was totally volunteer-based. And anyways, basically just approached the club and asked them if I found investors, if they'd be interested in, potentially considering like having us take it over. And they said that they would. And so then I just reached out to a few people, one of whom was Riley Sempt, who's a friend of mine. We actually are both from the North Shore in Vancouver, but we didn't actually meet till we went to university together at Yale. Anyways, Riley's a good friend of mine. He is married to an Irish woman, did his med school at UCC in Cork. And so he was kind of a natural person to reach out to about it. And then I don't know how, but we presented the idea to his family has a family office called Tricor. And just everything that their organization's about in terms of being people focused and building partnerships and doing things the right way. It just was an amazing fit. And then just once we kind of started talking and Rod, his dad, who is the director and runs the family office, once he spoke to a colleague that is sort of in the soccer world, They just kind of got interested and considered it, and then decided, I think, on their end to kind of take a bit of a leap of faith with it. I think now we're all extremely excited and have a really unbelievable opportunity to just do some really cool stuff with Treaty. So it's very exciting and I feel very lucky to have them as partners.
This club was founded in 2020. The women's team first plays in the SAE Airtricity Women's Premier Division. Then a year later, 2021, the men's team, which plays in the first division. What is the level of play?
Off the field, I really liken it to like the early 2000s in terms of just kind of where soccer was at in that period of time, where it was very heavily volunteer-based. It hadn't really gone very corporate. There was lots of like upheaval with like different groups. And I think also like Ireland was kind of marred with like a corruption scandal and just not the best people running it until probably around 2020. So I think that stifled a lot of the sort of development and growth that happened maybe in other countries. From that perspective, I think there's a lot of opportunities in terms of professionalizing it and, just starting to tap more into like the commercial spaces with it. And then on the field, you win the league, you go to Champions League. There's girls that played in the league this year that went to the World Cup for Ireland in Australia this year. And then on the men's side, it's also quite a competitive league. The men for Treaty play in the first division, which is just a league below the Premier Division, which the teams are going to Champions League if they win in that division. So, I think the thing, like, again, what sort of has struck me here is, and again, kind of comparing it to North American lens, like the teams are only training twice a week, which, again, like the last time I trained twice a week, I was about 11 playing rec soccer. So immediately coming in, you're looking at it thinking, wow, if they're doing this well training twice a week, how much better could they be training four times a week or, kind of standard to other places? So, I think there's a lot of amazing people, like a lot of amazing coaches. The education for coaches here with UEFA licenses and that kind of thing is super, super high. So like the quality of coaching is super high, and maybe that's what's allowed it to kind of like offset not a lot of, training sessions per week. But it's a competitive standard, like for Treaty. One of my teammates is, with the under-17 national team today and is the captain. They were playing Norway. And on the boys side, there's boys that are getting opportunities to go over to places like England if they're doing well. So I think all things considered, there's like a very, very strong base that will be really exciting to build off of.
If players are practicing twice a week, they have other responsibilities, jobs. Mm-hmm. And this isn't putting the food on the table and the roof over their head, but that's something that they'd like and you'd like to do for mm-hmm. both the men and the women in the future.
We're very much about building a long-term sustainable model and really building things up in a really fiscally responsible manner. I think the first year for us is just going to be really sort of like strengthening and professionalizing the structures, and then from there, I think we can kind of, start to layer in, building in sort of finance, like there will be increases to, budgets for the players side of things for sure, but it'll be incremental. And doing it kind of in a way that's sustainable in the long term is the plan.
What have the teams been drawing in the last few years in terms of attendance, and what are your goals there?
The attendance, to be honest, hasn't been great in the sense, I think on the men's side, maybe around like 800, and on the women's side, maybe like 200. But that being said, again, like Treaty's done an unbelievable job with like an army of volunteers. Just the labor that's gone into just putting the whole structure, together and teams out there and just getting the thing going. So I think that's what's really exciting and where I think there's a huge opportunity for us now with like full-time staff running things, right off the bat, where we have the time to go out and build the relationships. And I'm a super competitive person. And for me, I know the league record for like attendance for the women's side is 1500. And I look at that and think like, we're going to beat that the first game, that's my goal. And again, I don't know, people sometimes think I'm a bit nuts with the things that I strive for, but I think even just the fact that I'm, you know, that all of this has happened with Treaty is a good reminder that, like, to set sort of audacious goals, and, you know, that's the only way you make things happen. So I think that for me is for sure, like, my goal would be to break the league record the first game of the season on the women's side. Yeah. And just, you know, again, and also on the men's side, just drive higher attendance as well. And just, again, make it be something that, again, when there's the thing with Limerick is it's known as being sort of like a sports crazy city. So I think if you're going to have people spending dollars on multiple sports, like, Limerick's for sure the kind of city that people would do that. So I think from that, I think honestly, it's just a matter of connecting with the community, building a community, building the, you know, soccer games into a place that people want to come. And, you know, and I think we've even seen that, you know, at times in sports in Vancouver where, you know, when the atmosphere is great and people feel a sense of community and connection to teams, they'll ride it out through, you know, they're not as concerned about wins and losses, but there's like a sense of connection and loyalty to teams. And I think that that's, I definitely think that that's something we want to build for sure.
What have you learned, from your you know, year this year at Treaty United that you've applied your business knowledge and expertise in the game?
I mean, I started my own business with, you know, camps and clinics when I was 20. So, you know, that's a long time ago now. You know, so that's a space that I've always lived in, camps, clinics, showcases. And I think I've always kind of been on the cutting edge of, you know, doing things first in Canada with all the different things, you know, with showcases now are super common, but I started them back in 2007 when nobody was doing those sorts of things. So, yeah, I think in terms of just again, sort of building those sorts of structures. Yeah, I think that that's the kind of thing. And just living in that, like, soccer business space is where I've sort of spent my career alongside, obviously, my playing. And I think, you know, I think sort of the unique perspective that I bring to it is just a sense that, like, as a player, and I think players on, you know, with soccer clubs are your most important asset and you're the thing that matters the most. And so I think on a player side of things, like, I'm very aware of, like, what are the most important things to spend money on? What are the most important things to focus on? Kind of opportunity costs, where do you get the most value from, you know, where you kind of put that money? So I think from that perspective, I have kind of a bit of a unique slant on things, just again from sort of being an elite player myself and just kind of knowing what that world looks like and what's important there. And then to be honest, where it's been an amazing connection with Tricor and where it's just been an unbelievable experience so far for me is that, like, they obviously have built so many successful businesses and they just have an unbelievable track record and just the amount of support that, like, I've had through this entire process. And I've learned so much even in the last 3 months about just all the sort of, like, just important structures and details and all those sorts of things that I think sometimes maybe as, you know, sports people or whatnot, like, you're so focused on big ideas and kind of getting big projects off the ground that you're not necessarily looking at, like, the minutiae, you know, detail. And that's where I think, again, where this is, like, a really exciting partnership. And I genuinely say that just because they are so good on just, again, all dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's, getting the structures right so that, you know, their mantra is, like, you know, go fast to, or go slow to go fast and building just very, very carefully the right structures. And so that's where I think, you know, that's where I've learned the most. And that's where I just think we have, like, a very unique partnership in the sense that, like, I know the space so well from a soccer perspective, but obviously they're, you know, what they're amazing at is building successful businesses. So that's where I just think it's going to be a really dynamite combination between the two of us.
We're still waiting for the launch of a Canadian professional league. It's supposed to be coming in 2025. You're not waiting for that. You're taking this opportunity elsewhere where you can, especially since you do have the Irish background. You played for the national team, and you want to show that this can be done and turn into success.
I mean, I've probably been the longest, loudest screamer for the necessity of having a Canadian professional league and more opportunities for girls in Canada. And I think, I mean, I think just the issues within our sports system and our soccer system have sort of been very well documented over the last couple of years. And I think, you know, again, I am like absolutely rooting for the success of really like anything that gives opportunities to, you know, Canadian female players, and also obviously on the boys' side as well, to have CPL be successful. But yeah, obviously this was like an unbelievable opportunity. I think at the end of the day, Europe is a place that, you know, all players aspire to play in, the Champions League, all those things. And I think just as someone that is, you know, a competitive person and has high standards and loves to be pushed by what's around me, you know, I just think like, you know, the Champions League and the whole European promotion relegation sort of setup sort of fits in really well with my personality as well. And so I think that those are sort of things, yeah, just that have kind of, you know, and obviously just sort of just right time, right place, you know, serendipity, the universe, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it's where I've ended up, and it's an incredibly exciting opportunity. And yeah, I absolutely hope that things can, you know, again, open up in Canada and those kinds of opportunities can exist for players there. And until then, you know, I want to build something, that again, that potentially Canadian players can come over and join us in Treaty if it's something that, you know, that they want to do. You know, the thing that I think is so sad in Canada is like, and again, just with the lack of leadership we've had in the country, like, you know, back in, was it 2002, when there was 50,000 people in Edmonton at Commonwealth Stadium watching the under-19 women in the final. And there's just been so many, you know, like it's just the national team doing really well and winning medals and this and that. And like, we just haven't seemed to been able to capitalize on that kind of momentum. And I think here in Ireland, you know, obviously, again, it's incredible that the you know, and I was actually at the first game of Australia and Ireland at the World Cup this year. And so to have been a player that played in front of 500 people regularly with the national team, and then to be sitting in a crowd of 75,000 watching players that I played with for Ireland, and just like how unbelievable that is. Like, I just think it's so important to have leadership then that's able to capitalize on it. And I think that that's, for me, where it's an incredibly exciting time. Like, I'm so impressed with the FAI, like our football federation in Ireland. Like, there's been a huge changeover since their corruption was kind of, you know, unraveled and the people were thrown out. And it's just, that's what I think is so exciting, is that they've laid a really good, really professional foundation. There's some incredible people working within the FAI.
I guess comment on how you've grown as a person and as someone in soccer since doing that, and how that makes you a better CEO, or will make you a better CEO.
I'd say there isn't very many CEOs out there that have had, you know, the journey that I've had. And I think, you know, I think for me, just with my journey in general, like I think what I'm like, you know, and obviously it's amazing. The one thing I actually realized yesterday is that the opening weekend for our men's team in 2024 is going to be exactly 5 years to when I wrote the blog, to like the actual day, which is again, kind of like pretty crazy, you know, exactly sort of, you know, end of a chapter kind of thing. But yeah, no, I mean, I think for sure, like I've learned so many lessons, and you know, I think the biggest thing for me is that, like, obviously, you know, what we went through was incredibly difficult. But, you know, again, as a player, for me, like from a life lesson perspective, like I can honestly say, and I am so grateful to go to bed at night knowing that I never once compromised my integrity as a player. I never once didn't speak up when it was the right thing to do. And like, obviously there was consequences from that, from like, you know, just again, things that I suffered as a player, and like, just again, not being able to move on, knowing Berarda was on a field coaching girls when he'd been fired for sexual misconduct and how wrong that was. And, you know, there's been a lot of hard times for sort of being principled and standing by things. So yeah, I mean, I think that's, I've had a very genuine and authentic journey and a hard journey. And I think that that's the kind of thing, you know, I like I said, I think it's, yeah, I know what soccer should be. I know what it looks like in its best form. I know what it looks like in its worst form. And I think I just have a really good grasp of like what actually is important, and perspective, and again, just a healthy, massive dose of gratitude for just kind of the journey that I've had to get here. So, I'd say it's quite a unique perspective, and hopefully one that, you know, I can sort of leverage to make it a great experience for the players, make it a great experience for the community and the fans, and just build something that everybody can be really proud of.
Family behind Tricor, the Senft family includes Gene Senft, who was a whistleblower against the corruption in Olympic figure skating judging. You've got people who are supportive financially, but also people who know where you're coming from and where you've came from.
I found that out about, obviously it's Riley's mom. I didn't actually know that about her until the last couple of years, but yeah, I mean, I think anytime anyone's, you know, obviously I don't think very few people know better than I do the sort of the, just how hard and dirty and gross the institution of sport can be. And again, to sort of have somebody, again, way back before people were, you know, standing up for anything, that was, you know, obviously, you know, a huge part of change in figure skating and judging and just ethics and doing the right thing. She's an absolute role model. It's an absolute privilege to, you know, be in her company and to be supported by her family. And obviously Riley, her son's a good friend of mine and an amazing person, and obviously raised by amazing parents. She's an absolute role model, and it's an absolute privilege to be connected in any way with her after, you know, what she did. So
from my standpoint, I'll be keeping an eye on the men's and women's teams of Treaty United FC, based in Limerick. And in fact, I'm due for a trip to Ireland next year. I was there in 2004 for the centennial of Bloomsday in Dublin, and 2014, after the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow, I came over and actually went through Limerick, time in Limerick. So 2024, I'm going to have to look at my calendar and look at the calendar for the teams, because I'd like to see them play live myself and see how you're changing the business of soccer in Ireland.
Oh, that'd be amazing. And I can't wait to open it up and to just, get a little fan club for Treaty going in Vancouver. And I had someone say they were going to start one in Toronto. So I just honestly, like, my vision for it is just to have it be a place that, you know, people want to come and, you know, again, all the negative stuff we hear about sports, like, I just want it to be sort of a massively positive oasis of all the good in the game, because there's a ton of good in the game. You're always welcome. And yeah, let us know for sure.
North Vancouver defender Kira McCormick, the CEO and part owner of Treaty United.
Thanks for having me.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Hong Kong Free Press, three fugitive Hong Kong protesters and men who helped them hide jailed for up to 1 year and 8 months. The four defendants, who pleaded guilty to perverting the course of justice, have already been detained for 15 months since their arrest last July. Chang Chi-Kin, Anson Wong, Alex Wong, and Yep Ho appeared at West Kowloon Magistrates Court for the district court case on Wednesday. Chang and the two Wongs attempted to escape to Taiwan by boat after spending 2 years hiding in safe houses. In ABC News Australia, Tibetan Spaniel dog returned to owner after fleeing barrier highway crash near Broken Hill. Misha, the Tibetan Spaniel, went missing 60 kilometers from Broken Hill. Grazier Mitch Harrison trapped the dog 5 months later. They traveled 7 hours from South Australia this week to pick her up. In the Taiwan news, Chinese fighters intercept Canadian spy plane driven out by Taiwanese fighters. Ministry of National Defense said 10 People's Liberation Army Air Force aircraft and 4 People's Liberation Army Navy vessels were detected. Taiwanese aircraft spotter Taiwan ADIZ reported on Facebook that a rural Canadian Air Force Lockheed CP-140 Aurora had appeared in Taiwan's northern zone. Chinese fighter planes were then reportedly dispatched to intercept the Canadian aircraft. However, according to the aircraft spotter, they were later driven away by Taiwan's Air Force interceptors. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News.
News Podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Oregon Zoo elephants smash giant pumpkins in 25th annual Squishing of the Squash event. Quote, "We'll be giving our elephant family some extra large pumpkins to stomp on and chomp on," said Steve Lefebvre, who oversees the zoo's Asian elephant area. Quote, "First they destroy them, then they enjoy them." This year's pumpkins were provided by Pacific Giant Vegetable Growers Club member Larry Nelson and his daughter Amanda Gilmore. In King 5, Washington State's violent crime rate approaches national level. For many years, Washington was well below the national average for violent crimes. That has changed in recent years. The violent crime rate in the U.S. was 380.7 per 100,000 people in 2022, while Washington's rate was 375.6, according to the FBI's Crime in the Nation report released Monday. Just 2 years prior, the gap was much larger. Washington's 2020 violent crime rate was 293.7, while the national mark was 398.5. In the Times Colonist, outdoor vending machines filled with harm reduction supplies coming to three island hospitals. Vending machines will be installed outside the ERs of Victoria General Hospital, North Island Hospital in Campbell River, and Nanaimo Regional General Hospital. The vending machines, funded by the Mental Health and Addictions Ministry, cost $2,000 a month to lease and are stocked with needles, condoms, and other items by the BC Centre for Disease Control. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone. The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to school librarians around British Columbia. It's School Library Day in BC on October 23rd. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. These rich men know the rich men, Lord knows they all just want to have total control. Want to know what you think, want to know what you do, and they don't think you know, but I know that you do, because your dollar ain't shit. And it's taxed to no end, 'cause the rich men know the rich men. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 22nd, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 22nd of October in 2012, Lance Armstrong lost all 7 Tour de France titles due to doping charges? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. If you're in Canada, you can't get Facebook updates due to the Trudeau Liberals' Bill C-18, so why not subscribe to the newsletter? Or follow The Breaker News on Twitter, also known as X. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.